Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today I have a great guest on. It's going to be one that's not usually the type of guest that I do have, but I find their stories very interesting. And when I find an interesting story, I have to talk about it. So my guest name is Jennifer. So, Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nancy.
How are you doing today? Okay?
Yeah, I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Okay, now, Jennifer, let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about Jennifer. Now, you went to college, so let's talk a little bit about what you took in college, and then we'll go into your book.
Okay. Well, I was a student at Michigan State University when I started the book. I graduated with a major in biology, and I have a minor in math and also now in chemistry. So the book is a lot different from what I guess what my other interests are.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I looked at the bio about your books and everything, mm-hmm. and I find it actually very interesting that someone who, as young as you at the time, would want to write about John Holmes. So the book is John Holmes, Life Measured in Inches. So now let's talk a little bit about that. Plus you have a co-author by the name of Jill. Mm-hmm. So maybe tell us how you met Jill, why you guys decided to do the book, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Sure. Well, I was 21 when I decided to start the book. Actually, what happened was I went to the theater to see a movie, and the movie Wonderland with Val Kilmer as John Holmes was the next thing playing. And at that time, I had heard John Holmes' name in the context on the radio that they would say our sets are longer than John Holmes. So I knew what it meant, but I had never seen one of his films. After I saw the movie Wonderland, at first I was really horrified, but then I just became more and more interested really quickly in John Holmes' life. And I was looking for a book to read about him, and I found out there wasn't one. So at that time is when I had decided to write the book. And a couple years, I'm trying to think, it was about a year and a half after I started that I met Jill, actually on a message board related to Wonderland. And we talked for about a year before I invited her to help me write the book, because it was just too much for me when I was trying to write it and going to school full-time.
Okay.
Jill's a Canadian. She, at the time, I'm trying to think, she is 50, and I'm 26, so a little bit older than me, which was a really interesting partnership, living in two different countries and the separation in age as well.
So did you find it hard to write the book, or were you fascinated enough throughout the entire book that it kept you pretty busy?
I was fascinated. Both of us were fascinated throughout the whole project. Like, it was just, it was a lot of work for one person, but especially once Jill came on to help, like, we just kept each other going, and it's a really fascinating subject on John Holmes' life. It's tragic. It's a tragic story, but an interesting one.
In your research, I'm sure you had to contact people that knew him, that worked with him, and even that were married to him. Is that true?
Yeah, we didn't actually get to interview anyone who was married to him, but we did interview a lot of people who worked with John, as far as other actors and actresses, directors, producers, his longtime manager and friend, Bill Amerson. We interviewed, in total, we talked to 35 people for the book, and we also had access to some older interview material.
Mm-hmm. When you were looking through, you know, the information about John Holmes, what did you find to be probably the most fascinating about him?
In the beginning, I thought the most fascinating thing was that he was this boy from Ohio. With myself being from Michigan, I think that was what I thought was really interesting, was that he was this boy from Ohio who joined the Army and then came back and moved to California and started working in porn films before there was an adult industry. I mean, not to today's extent, anyway. At that time, making adult films was illegal. So he was really one of the first, and he was probably the first famous male performer. So all that was interesting, and then also it was interesting to talk to some of the people who John really touched positively, like his godson.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to people who talked about his acting,
mm-hmm.
because he really wasn't an actor, okay, but this just kind of basically came pretty natural to him, why do you think that may have happened?
I think, well, John was a natural storyteller. I mean, one of the things that he's really well known for is his ability to tell a story, like to entertain other people, and also to tell a story to bend the truth. So I think that really helped him out as an actor, to be able to stretch reality.
Okay. And the people that you interviewed that worked with him, was there anyone who didn't like him as an actor or as a person?
Actually, no, not that we talked to. There is a piece in there from, her name's Julia Anderson. She was known as Aunt Peg in her films, but she worked with John and had described it once as being unpleasant, that this was during when John was really addicted to drugs and he wasn't pleasant to work with. And she, though, had also said that several years after that experience, she hadn't seen him, and he came up to her after he had been acquitted of the murders and was off of drugs, and he apologized for being a jerk, and they had a hug. And so, I mean, I think John was at his worst when he was on drugs, but most people liked working with him.
What prompted him to get caught up in the drug world?
I think it was just, I don't know, because I wasn't alive back then, but I do believe that it was the era of the 60s and 70s that was just really prominent. Also being in Hollywood, especially during the 70s and 80s, there was a lot of cocaine from what I've heard. So I think he was just surrounded by it, and he had that addictive personality. His second wife, Lori Holmes, said that he was just like would become addicted to anything he did, whether it was sex or women or drugs.
Now, his second wife actually said the book was okay. Is that true?
Yeah, she approves of the book, and in January, Jill and I went to the Adult Entertainment Expo in Las Vegas, and Lori joined us, and yeah, it was really great. It's been great to have her support.
When you talked with Lori, did you, I'm sure you asked her what it was like to live with him, to be with him.
Yeah, Lori, their home life, I mean, it just sounds like a regular family, you know, normal types of things with John reading to her and her son, and they enjoyed going to garage sales and all those types of things. So,
did John himself have children?
No, John didn't have any children. He was sterile.
Okay. When you started first getting into all of the porno information and
mm-hmm.
meeting with the different people that, you know, that you needed to interview, were you nervous about that, or were you excited? How did that affect you?
I was nervous. I'm shy, so it was hard for me at first, but luckily people were really receptive to me. When I first started, luckily there was an event to celebrate what would have been John's 60th birthday. It was called Fit for a King. It was held at the Erotic Museum in, well, it's no longer there, but it was in Hollywood. And there I met a lot of people that were the first connections that just branched out from there. And so that was really great.
The people that John had come in contact with, you know, after they found out that he had some age-related causes of his death, did you talk with any of those people?
Do you mean the people that he worked with after he knew he had AIDS?
Before and after.
Oh, yeah. We actually got to interview several people. The one that I thought was probably the most meaningful related to that was Amber Lynn, because she had actually worked with John in Italy. He knew that he had HIV and made the decision to go out and make two more movies in Italy. No one got AIDS from John, but it always, up until Jill actually did the interview with Amber, up until that interview, that was the hardest thing for me to accept, was how could he have done that? But Amber explains from her own perspective as a recovered addict that his decision-making would have been affected and that she had forgiven him. And that meant a lot.
I'm sure it would. While you were interviewing most of the people, were they reluctant to say anything to you, or did they just come right out and just tell you anything and everything that you may have asked?
Some people were more reluctant than others, of course. Most people, once they understood what our plan was for the book, that we weren't coming at it at a negative angle and just wanted to do something as factual and unbiased as possible, people tended to be more open. And also, a lot of people we kept in contact throughout the writing process, so there were opportunities to ask questions kind of as we got to know people better. So that worked out well also.
When he, you know, when he found out that he was HIV positive and he decided to go ahead and you know, go through that, even though, you know, it's okay to forgive that. Mm-hmm. And you said that nobody that you know actually got it.
Right.
If somebody had worked with him or was supposed to work with him and found out that he had HIV, do you think they would have gone ahead and done it?
I don't believe so, because this was in the very beginning of when people in the United States became aware of AIDS in the mid-80s. So I think everybody was so terrified about it that if they had known, they probably wouldn't have worked with him, or possibly would have worked with him, but would have considered using condoms.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's known for, of course, you know, his inches that he had,
mm-hmm.
and that was his big thing. But some of the stuff that I read on him, his sense of humor was very good, and he really was pretty smart, but I don't think people look at him in that respect.
Right. Yeah, I think his, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, his ability to tell stories, and he was, I don't know, he just liked to make other people happy. And it was, you know, in his own way, a sense of intelligence. But, I mean, yeah, he dropped out of school, so he wasn't book smart, so to speak, but he was very intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Now, someplace, first of all, Jennifer, let's give out your website so people can go look at your website. So go ahead and tell them what it is.
Sure. The website is johnholmesinches.com. There's also a blog, johnholmesinchesblog.com.
And if they wanted to buy your book, John Holmes, A Life Measured in Inches, where would they go to get that?
You can buy the book at johnholmesinches.com. It's also at Amazon and some of the other major online stores.
Now, on part of your website, when it comes to John Holmes, you have a quote or a saying that he said, and I'm going to read it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to ask you just a couple questions about it. It says, The tree of life represents the roots of man. The branches are the different directions a man can take, live, or exist. When you're dead, those that you leave behind will put you in a part of that tree. It represents what was, what is, and what will be. It's internal. That's a pretty powerful statement, you know, by a person, not just John Holmes, but a person to look at things like that. Where did that statement come from?
That statement, if I remember correctly, is from John's autobiography called Porn King.
Okay. But, I mean, the statement that he's made right there, and it says that it was made by John Holmes, that's really very important because, you know, what he's basically saying is talking about life and how it is and how it exists. And, again, because of what he, you know, what he did and how he made his living, I'm thinking a lot of people would look at him and go, there's nothing there except those inches. You know, so that was, to me, a very profound statement for him.
Yeah. The working title, when John was recording the audio tapes that were later used to write Porn King, he had wanted to call the book The Monkey Tree, and his perception of that related that quote was the tree of life, when people would look back on his death or anybody else's, that the people, the survivors would be the ones who would place you, the others, on the branches of the tree. And so, yeah, I think John always knew that because of his profession that some people would choose, you know, to look down on him. And that was one of the reasons, besides the other things that had happened in John's life, that it was so important to keep the book non-biased one way or the other.
Now, you talk about in the book how in your book how he was like he was famous for being a gun-toting detective in the Johnny Wadd films. And of course there was money with that. But you also stated that he spent it mostly on his wife and his mistresses. Do you know how many mistresses he may have had?
No. I mean, people say that John loved thousands of women, and some people say John loved no one. He had, during his lifetime, two wives and numerous mistresses.
And the wife that you spoke with, did she talk about the mistresses that he had while they were married?
Yeah, Lori had mentioned that she knew that John had affairs because at that point she met John in 1983, so he had already been a performer for a long time, so she knew what she was getting herself into, so to speak, and I don't think that she really felt it, you know, right if she loved him to ask him to change, because she knew that this is who he was. Of course, it didn't please her, but she also could have been, she said, with other men, but she chose not to.
Which was probably wise on her part. For John, when he started to get addicted to cocaine, I'm sure it cost him an arm and a leg, you know, keep the habit up. And he actually turned in to setting up a robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Basically, what happened is John, at that point, was kind of acting as a go-between to get drugs for all these different people. And the people at the house on Wonderland had guns and jewelry, and they traded those with Ed Nash, who was a L.A. nightclub owner, for drugs. And then they wanted their stuff back. And Ed Nash said, well, you have to give me the money before you get your things back, because they had already used up the drugs. And John went over to Nash's house because he was a friend of Nash's. The people at the Wonderland house didn't have a connection with him besides John. And he left the sliding door open with the intention that the Wonderland people would be coming in to rob Ed Nash and take back their things.
But that's not really what happened, was it?
Well, that part of it worked out. Unfortunately, somehow Ed Nash found out that John had been the one to set him up. And so at that point, it's believed that John may have been used, you know, to get back at the Wonderland people, and that's when the murders happened.
In the Wonderland, how many people were actually murdered?
Well, there were five people who were bludgeoned, and four of them died. One survived.
And do you know who the one survivor was?
Yeah, her name was Susan Monius, but I've heard that she went into protective custody and has a new name.
Okay, so you actually did not have an opportunity to interview her or talk with her?
No.
Would you have liked to if you could have?
Yeah, I would have loved to. Not sure right offhand what I would have asked her, but yeah, in the process of writing the book, there was nobody that I would have intentionally turned down. I would have interviewed anybody who had had experiences with John to talk about.
Okay. So you talked to like about 33 people or 35 people, is
mm-hmm.
that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. And in your book, there are pictures in your book, is that correct?
Yeah, there's three photo sections, beginning with his early days, including some childhood photos. There's also some rare nude photos of John. Yeah, it's a great three photo sections.
Okay, and there's also a review of the films that he had done?
Yeah, Jill and I together, we watched a total of 200 of John Holmes' films. Some of them were loops, which are just little short, like 5 to 15-minute sex scenes, sometimes without any dialogue. And we also watched 114 features. So 86 loops and 114 features. There's also a 22-page filmography in the book that's not available anywhere else. It's not available online. So a lot of work went into the filmography and the reviews section, in addition to the biography.
Let's give out the name of your book, your website, and how people can get it again so they don't miss it.
Sure. The book is John Holmes, A Life Measured in Inches, by Jennifer Sugar and Jill Nelson. You can buy a copy at johnholmesinches.com or pick it up at amazon.com or any of the other major online bookstores.
And can they order it through your website?
Yeah, johnholmesinches.com.
Okay. When you were doing the reviews and everything,
mm-hmm.
was there any time that you felt rather sorry for him or, you know, sorry for what the turnout was or how his emotions were involved?
The time I remember feeling the most sorry about how everything turned out was actually the day of the book launch in Hollywood. After the book launch, there was a free screening of Eruption, which is a great movie. John does some great stunt work. He scales a building and scuba dives, and I just watched it, and it was before any of the Wonderland events took place and before I believe that John's addiction really began to negatively impact him, and I just felt sad, you know, watching that and thinking about everything that was to come for him in his life.
If you had been around in his lifetime, as an adult, mm-hmm. Jennifer, and you had an opportunity to talk with him, think you would have said to him or asked him?
That's a hard question. It's interesting because I think I had an advantage in writing the book after his death and not, in some ways, not have been alive during that time because, I don't know. I mean, if I had been around, I don't know what I would have asked him. That's interesting.
If you had been around, would you still you know, wanted to write the book about his life, do you think?
Well, I personally think that, you know, the best biographies are written after a person has passed away, because otherwise you don't have the complete story. So, I wouldn't have started it, back while he was still alive if I could have. Of course, it would have been nice to interview him, but with all the sources we had of interviews he had done in the past, I really felt like we almost knew John Holmes from reading all these past interviews and watching him on so many films and talking to people who had worked with him. And
while you were watching the films, did anything cross your mind, like, you know, what kind of person was he that he was not showing on screen? You know, was he a person that you would have liked to get to know, not just because of inches or whatever, but just as a person?
Yeah, I think so. I think he would have been a really kind and generous, fun person for the most part to be around. Yeah, I would have liked to know John.
You know, because there's a lot of, I mean, I don't go around watching a lot of porno flicks by any means, but, you know, everybody in my era, because I am 61, going to be 61 next month, so everybody in my era knew about John Holmes. You know, and everybody thought, oh, man, you know, he's so cool, he's so great.
Yeah.
And the men, you know, the men would go, oh, man, look at that, you know, that I had that, you know. And they would kind of joke about it. But at the same time, I would think that probably a lot of men were very envious of, you know, his measurements. And I would think a lot of women would be very curious about, you know, with those many inches, would it hurt? Does he use it? You know, right? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So while you were watching the films and stuff, did any of those kind of thoughts go through your mind?
Yeah, definitely. When you were mentioning that, I thought of some things that Bill Margold, who had been an actor as well as also writing for some of the films, he said that something about, like, all men wanted to be him and all women, you know, wanted to, you know, try him on for size, something to that effect. And, yeah, I think that's true. And, I mean, definitely in watching the movies, I was curious, you know, what would it have been like to be with John Holmes?
Mm-hmm. No, and that, I think, would be a very normal tendency for anybody who was doing any kind of research.
Yeah.
Because when people start to do research, they have to get into it in order to make it real. They have to get into it to come up with really good information.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you'd have said no, I would have gone, okay, well, you know, that's good being able to stay nice and, you know, not get involved whatsoever. But that's not really true, because you were very curious about him while
yeah.
you were writing. Okay. The part that you were most curious about, tell me that part.
Well, the part I was most curious about, because it was the part that initially got me interested in John, was actually his involvement with the Wonderland murders. Because it still is, a quote-unquote unsolved crime, I was just really intrigued by that. You know, what were the details about why it's unsolved? And so that was the most interesting for me personally to learn about. But we really went into depth with all aspects of his life. So, readers won't be disappointed.
I'm sure they won't. So let's give out your website again and the name of your book so they can find you.
Sure. The book's John Holmes, A Life Measured in Inches, and you can buy it at the website, johnholmesinches.com.
And at all the other bookstores. What
mm-hmm.
made you really want to write about him, and then how did you come up with the title? Because it's a pretty good title.
Yeah, it's a great title. Actually, Bill Margold, who I mentioned earlier, he came up with the title. I was thinking originally about calling it Enigma, because when I first started researching, I felt like John was such an enigmatic character, like between his storytelling and just all the different things he had been involved with. I felt it was really hard to pin him down, but this title is really perfect because it highlights I don't know, the irony about why he was famous, but then when you read the book, there was so much more to the man's life. You know, look beyond the inches. What else did you ask me?
The title that you chose.
Oh, yeah.
Is what you just kind of explained, which was good. The legacy that you think John Holmes left, what is that? What do you think about it?
Well, I think whether you like John Holmes or whether you don't like John Holmes, he's a part of American pop culture. I don't believe that there will ever be a male performer who can surpass John Holmes simply because he was really the first.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to do more books like this?
I know that Jill is considering, she's considering writing a book about the women of the Golden Age, which would be a really interesting topic. I'm not sure yet about myself. I wouldn't say no to writing another book about the adult industry, but I'm just waiting for the right idea. This idea just sort of came to me, so I'm just kind of waiting for that again.
Okay. The other thing is, when you and Jill were writing, I'm sure you guys rewrote the chapters several times over.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In order to do that, you either had to get new information or you had to look at things in a little different way. So was it new information, or did you look at things differently, or maybe think the wording would be better a different way?
It was a combination of all those things. Because we were interviewing people, I mean, it had slowed down near the end, but we would still, like the interview with Amber Lynn, that was right at the end of the writing process. So when we would get these new interviews, we would have to make adjustments to rework the material so it wasn't just like crammed in there. We did a lot of revisions. We would email the chapters back and forth. It was an issue of the best wording, and a lot of these, there's stories, you know, from different people that are slightly different, and so that's why we went with the oral history format, to be able to showcase kind of all the different sides of the stories and aspects of John's life. That way the reader could make the final decision instead of us.
When you were talking with his ex-wife, did she help you also rework some of the chapters, or was she not involved with that?
She was involved with that very little. There were a few, you know, just personal things for herself that she didn't want in there. And, you know, that would be the case with anybody that we interviewed. We would show them how we had used their material, and in most cases people were pleased, and if couple of cases people wanted, you know, a line or two removed, and it was no problem.
And how did the porno industry accept your book? Hello?
It's called the Comfort Bike because that's what it feels like when you ride it. Comfortable. The Day 6 Comfort Bicycles produce ergonomic bikes that are the equivalent of a good ergonomic chair, allowing you a natural body position as you use it. With a fully adjustable backrest, wide seat, and a high handlebar design, the Day 6 bikes help you to rediscover the fun and freedom of riding. No hunching over, like when you ride a traditionally designed bike, no matter how fast you're going. Even mounting the bike is easy with a step-through designed frame. Please visit day6bicycles.com to see and learn more about this revolutionary design that is making bike riding a joy again for so many people.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
All right, we're back. Sorry for the little interruption. Jennifer, I don't know if you got to hear the question that I had asked you before we dropped. Okay, and I did not get to hear your answer, so if you could just repeat that, that would be great.
Sure. Would you repeat the question?
I was asking about how other people in the porno industry accepted.
Well, I'm not involved in the adult industry, so I don't really know, you know, if there's been any major talk about it, but so far it's been reviewed really positively by all the major sources like AVN and Hustler Canada, trying to think what else, XBiz, and all the people that we interviewed were really happy with the book and how their quotes were used in the context. So, yeah, it's been really positive so far.
Why do you think, Jill, that a lot of the people that John had worked with, you know, like Marilyn Chambers and Jamie Gillis, all of those, really never talked before, and for some reason they actually talked with you guys?
I'm not positive about that. I know for some of the past projects that other people weren't interested in going on camera. For instance, for the WAD documentary or the thing that was on the E! Channel several years ago. So being that it was a book, that did get us some people that wouldn't be interviewed before. Also, I think just knowing where we were coming from, maybe they hadn't been asked before to talk about John, all those types of reasons.
I think it was pretty important that both you and Jill, your co-writer, were very unbiased about all of it. Was it hard to be unbiased at certain times?
It could be hard at certain times. That was one reason, one of the several reasons why it was great to have two authors working on the project, because we were really able to balance one another out. With that, if ever it seemed like things were going in one direction versus the other.
When you and Jill were sending your interviews back and forth, how well did that work? Was it easy to do? Was it hard to do?
Actually, I felt like it was really easy. We went to California together twice to do interviews in person with people. And then when we went home, we split up the transcribing and sent them to each other. And we also got together right before the end when the book was to be published to do the photo section captions, because that was the one part that would be a little bit hard to do online, to decide how to caption the photos and which ones to use. So for the really important parts, we were there together in person, but a lot of it we could do easily on email or over the phone.
There's also, like, during the time, like, they have Viagra and all that good stuff now.
Yeah.
But they didn't have it during, you know, John's time. So how could he just keep going? Was there a technique he used? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, John would be more excited on certain days than others, and it depended on who he was working with. And, of course, there were and are what's known as fluffer girls who can help to get the man ready for the scene off camera. But I think most of the time John didn't have a problem with that. You know, there were only maybe two stories that came up where he had had a problem, and both were related to, you know, having been out late partying the night before or having too much sex the night before, and those types of things can be expected.
Since the adult industry is more accepted now than it was, say, in, you know, the beginning of John Holmes' times, why do you think people are so interested in the adult industry?
I think it's just the natural human curiosity. You know, I think that really the only thing that's changed is the public acceptance. You know, I think from as long as people have been able to do art, there's been nudes, you know, and sexual type of images and sculptures. So I think it's just a natural human thing.
Okay. In your book that you have some pictures that have never been seen before, how did you acquire them, or why did they say okay for you to put them in there?
We were able to get pictures from, some of them are stills from films or pictures that people had given to us with permission to go in the book. We were not at a loss to be able to put pictures in the book. There were just a ton of photos. It was kind of tricky at the end to get the permissions for all of them, just because, you know, both of us being first-time authors, we didn't have any experience in how to go about that. But besides that little fact, like, it was really easy to get pictures.
Did you have to go visit some of the adult stores? I mean, did you do that in your research?
It wasn't necessary, really, to go to adult stores for research, because I find, like, a lot of them, if I go in, sometimes they don't know what's going on. Like, I ask, hey, do you have any John Holmes movies? And they're like, oh, those are all out of print. And no, they're not all out of print. Like, they're still coming out with new editions. Like, for instance, of the original Johnny Wadd movie just came out last year. Anyway, I did do one interview on the set of a film. I interviewed Paul Thomas. And so that was kind of an interesting experience, just because by that point I had watched so many adult films that it was not really shocking to me anymore to be on the set and, you know, see the movie being made. But overall it was just a lot of fun to work on the book.
Okay. Now, on your website, you have different, like, excerpts from different chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the chapters in your book, which one was your favorite one?
Oh, that's a good question. My favorite is probably, I've got the book right here. The King. At the beginning, when things are just going great and people are talking about all the wonderful things that John would do, you know, to help friends out. And he was just like a boy almost, you know, with his energy and enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite chapter.
Now, each chapter that you guys wrote, did you guys combine what you wrote, or did one of you write one chapter and maybe somebody else wrote another, you know, the other one wrote the other chapter, or was it constantly combined, you know, your work efforts together?
It was constantly combined. There were definitely parts where one of us would have done more research than the other. For instance, Jill mostly researched his earlier films for the beginning chapters. And then I did a lot of the research about AIDS, but the whole book we would work on together. There's no chapter that was written only by one of us. And I think that's one of the things that helps it have that unity. It's not choppy where you can tell, like, oh, Jill wrote this and I wrote that. the whole thing, I mean, paragraph by paragraph we shared.
Okay. In part of your book, you also talk about the swinging clubs that were going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit about the swinging clubs and how that probably had something to do also with the adult industry?
Swingers clubs would just be like, I mean, this was the era of free love and exploration. There wasn't really STDs. There was no AIDS, as far as people knew, to be worried about. So people were very open in exploring their sexuality and going to parties or clubs where they would trade partners or have multiple partners. And it was really, you know, the people in the industry were no exception, that they would be at these parties. And, you know, John enjoyed the party scene there, too. It was going to orgies and that type of thing.
When John first got started with the drug scene,
mm-hmm.
did he immediately start with cocaine, or was there something else that he started with?
I think, well, John started with drinking and smoking marijuana. I think it was probably, for John, a slow progression from that, because in the beginning he would say that he was opposed to even drinking or taking Tylenol, in part because his father had been an alcoholic. And so I think that really affected him, but then the longer he had been around it, he was, you know, more open to trying it, and just because of his personality, he was open to trying other things and became addicted.
A lot of talk went down about the murders and stuff, and they really tried to pin it on somebody, and they figured that if they pinned it on him, it would help his career. Was that one of the reasons why they tried to pin it on him?
I don't think that it would have helped his career any. I mean, I think a lot of people were apprehensive about working with John, even after he was acquitted of the murders, just that he had had this stigma. But he got right back into work. His first movie when he came back was actually how he met his second wife, Lori Holmes.
Okay, so she was in the movie with him?
Yeah. She was an adult performer when John met her, and she was just a young single mom, and John really took her under his wing, and he told her that, you know, he would take care of her and provide for her son, and she didn't need to work in movies anymore. And so after that, she quit.
Okay. Now, do you think that John Holmes had a lot to do with the way the adult industry took off, let's say?
I'm not sure about that, because at this time there was just a pretty big number of really famous X-rated films. So I think with or without John Holmes, that would have taken place. I think that John Holmes, his name probably became maybe one of the first major household names that people would know, and like me hearing on the radio. But besides that, I think it would have happened without John.
Where are some of the people now that worked with him?
In a lot of different places. Some have passed away, and some are still working, and some lead, you know, happy suburban vanilla lifestyles.
Now, there's been, and I don't know his whole history, but I had heard at one time that he actually was in prison and that's where he died. Was that true?
No, actually, he was held in contempt of court. I don't remember the exact number. I think 113 days after he was acquitted, and that was because he wouldn't give more information about what he knew about the murders. But he was released in 1983, and then he died in 1988.
Okay. Because the talk was going around before that he had died in prison. And the talk was going around that he actually, you know, died of AIDS in prison. So I just kind of wanted to clear that up a little bit because I did not believe that that was true. But again, I don't know the whole history.
Right.
Now, in your book, you talked about how Laura Holmes, his wife, you know, said Johnny wanted to make $1 million and then just kind of disappear. But he really wasn't very happy until he went to the beach, and that's where he could disappear and be himself. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that he enjoyed the fans, but he really liked, you know, being private. And he had told Bob Chin when he was on this rural beach on the island of Kauai that if you can't ever find me, this is where I'll be. So I think he really, you know, in many ways yearned for his privacy, but at that point it was something he couldn't get back. He didn't really have any other, he had other skills that he could have used, but I think he didn't know how at that point. He was so recognized. Anywhere he would have gone, people would have been, you know, recognizing him, and he never could have gotten away from it.
What kind of other skills did he have that he could have used?
John had some really good hobbies. He liked woodworking and drawing, sculpting, jewelry making. He liked to read. I think he really would have been interested maybe in directing or producing a regular mainstream film had he had the opportunity. I think he had a lot of talents that he could have put to work if he had known how.
Mm-hmm. I think we have a caller on the line, but I'm not sure, so let's see. Is there a caller on the line? Hello? No, okay. Just wanted to make sure because I heard a beep, and I want to make sure. When John Holmes died, was there a lot of people that felt, you know, his loss?
I would say so. In the last chapter of the book, we have people's reactions, remembering what their reactions were when they had heard John Holmes died. And it's a really sad, touching chapter. You know, some people, Paul Thomas had said, because Paul Thomas was an actor during John Holmes' time and is now directing films, he said that the surprising thing wasn't that John Holmes died of AIDS and had it. The surprising thing was that the rest of us didn't. So I think maybe a lot of people felt that way, and a lot of people were scared, you know, who were working in the industry, what if I have it too? And a lot of people actually quit at that time.
When was he still married to Laura when he died?
Yes.
And did she elaborate a little bit about how she felt with his death?
I know that, I mean, she was just, you know, very sad, because John had been, you know, such a mentor to her and her son, and it was a huge loss for them.
Mm-hmm. And what is Laura doing today?
I'm not really sure what she's doing today.
Okay. Now, you guys don't stay in touch with her now that the book is all published, do you?
We've been in some contact with her. We saw her in Las Vegas, and I think Jill keeps better contact with people than I do.
Okay. We're almost out of time, but I'd like to ask you one last question.
Sure.
Is there anything that you yourself would like to say about John Holmes that would mean a great deal to you about him, his life, and all the tragedies that he actually went through?
Yeah, I think that it's a great story that, you know, is very, you know, like a emotional roller coaster almost, the things that happened in John's life. But I think that there's a lot of lessons that anybody could learn, you know, from reading about John's life, you know, not to use drugs is the main theme of it. You know, John was always at his best when he wasn't under the influence and when he was sober. So I think that's it's a very strong anti-drug message. And, you know, just a lesson about how to handle fame in general.
Do you think a lot of people in today's world actually have a very hard time handling fame?
Yes. I mean, she seems to have it under control now, but if we think of Britney Spears, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that have trouble handling fame, especially today with the paparazzi and TMZ. It would be so much harder.
If you had been alive and you had met John Holmes, mm-hmm. would you have considered to be a part of his film?
I was never interested in being in a movie. It would be difficult, I guess, for me to answer, you know, how it would have been then. But the thought of me being in a movie never crossed my mind. So I would imagine, you know, even with the times being different, I probably still would not have been interested in being in a film with John, but I certainly would have liked to talk with John and get to know him, and I've been told that John would have liked me. People would say that I looked like John's type and that he would have, you know, I'm trying to think how to put this. He would have talked to me very sweetly.
Okay, well, that would be nice. That would be good.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, except let's do this one more time before we're on time.
Sure.
Give us the website, the name of your book, and where you can get it.
Sure. The title of the book is John Holmes, A Life Measured in Inches, and you can get it at johnholmesinches.com and all the other amazon.com and other major online bookstores.
All right. Now, if you and Jill decide to write another book together, you don't know if it would be in the same, you know, the same field. It could possibly be in a different field. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. And you don't know if you really want to write another book or not, but you're probably thinking in it somehow behind your mind, huh?
I'm sure both of us would love to write another book. Jill has an idea in mind of something that she would like to do, and I'm just waiting for the right inspiration for a second book. I haven't quite come up with the right idea just yet. But, yeah, I would love to write a second book. It was wonderful.
Great. The experience had to be really, I would think it would be a lot of fun, but very emotional.
Yeah, it was hard. You know, once it was done, it was 4 years of work for me, and then it was kind of like, well, what's next after it was done?
Now, have you read your book since it was all totally done and completed?
I haven't actually read the whole thing. I skimmed through it and had to select parts to read out loud at book signings, but no, ever since it's been printed, I have not read the whole thing cover to cover.
And actually, that's what most people tell me.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask if, you know, you had read it. And again, most people say they really have not read. They put a lot of work into it, and they just needed to take a little bit of time. But our time is just about up, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Jennifer, to talk with us about it. And, you know, hopefully we got it out there enough so people will be curious about it and want to go take a look at it. That would be wonderful for you.
Yeah, well, sure. It was great talking to you, and thanks a lot for doing this interview with me, Nancy.
You're very welcome. You take care, and you have a great day, okay?
All right. Bye.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great day. And next week, it'll be coming live from Roswell. So take care. Bye now.